When were you born?
14th of February, 1951.
Okay, and where?
In Durban, Natal, KwaZulu-Natal, South Africa.
1951, fuck sakes. So 6 years after the Second World War. So your old man must have fought in the war.
He did. He came back with three fingers missing off his left hand and two fingers missing off his right hand.
That's a very Django Reinhardt.
Yeah, but he wasn't a guitarist, unfortunately. He was a very sweet man, but he married a woman before he left for the army.
Yeah.
Came back and to discover that she'd had a child with a sailor.
Yeah.
And for some reason, he ended up supporting this child, but he divorced her and then met my mother a couple of years later.
But he probably loved her.
Maybe.
Yeah.
But I think we kind of also... we kind of ended up being denied certain things on the basis of that, because he was a working class man. He had no education. He was the 13th child of 13 children.
So did he come from the UK?
No, he was born in Maritzburg.
Yeah, it's just where all my people come from too. My grandfather's buried in Pietermaritzburg. My grandmother's.
If you go to Maritzburg now and you open up the phone book, you'll find a lot of kitchens. All my cousins.
And is it children. Spelled like kitchen?
K-I-T-C-H-E-N.
Yeah. And where does that surname come from?
From England. There's a lot of kitchens in England.
But where in England?
His family was from Manchester area.
Mm. Yeah, because us Handleys come from that area too.
Yeah.
I mean, there's more of
it. It was quite interesting when my dad, I mean, when my brother went to the UK 5 years ago, he researched the family tree, as it were.
Have you got it?
No, he has, I think. But he discovered that most of the people on my father's side were thugs, absolute thugs and thieves and naughty bastards who ran away to Africa.
And
my mom's side as well, they were like just working class rabble who had nothing going for them in England anymore and left.
Mm.
So we don't come from very esteemed stock. But having said that, my father was a good man. He was an amazing man. And he worked for the railways all his life. He had no education.
What did he do on the railways?
He was a checker.
A checker.
A checker checks things that come off a ship.
So it's just railways and harbours?
Yeah.
So he worked in the docks?
He worked in the docks.
So he didn't actually work on steam trains and stuff like that?
No. But he lost his fingers in the war in a train accident. In Italy.
Yeah.
They were on a troop train and it overturned and he lost his fingers.
Shit. And your mom?
My mom was a spinster matron working in a hotel when my father met her.
And her surname? Fuck!
Fuck! Dorothy Fuck.
Was that her name? Dorothy?
No, Dorothy, yes. Dorothy Foley. F-O-L-E-Y. Foley.
Which is Irish. There's a Foley's catheter.
Is it?
Yeah, Foley's catheter. It goes up your willy to drain the urine out.
Maybe at some point they might have been connected, but...
Dorothy Foley. And
Dorothy
your dad's
Foley.
Name?
Stanley William Kitchen.
Stanley William.
Yeah. And my brother's name is Peter William and I'm Sydney Stanley.
Okay, you were Sydney Stanley and you were first born in 1951 and then he was born a year later.
1953.
2 years later.
Yeah. Wait. He was born in... He's a year and a half older than me, so if I was born...
He's younger than me.
So he was born in August 1952.
That's like my brother's age, Matthew's age.
August 1952, my brother was born.
And then no sisters, nothing after that.
No, my mom had me, she was 40 years old. Yeah, my brother when she was nearly 42, and that was quite...
That's hectic.
Unheard of in 1951, you know.
Was your old girl sexy?
She was very petite, very sweet.
No, that's what I mean. Was she like small and... Because, I mean, you're not fat and...
No. My brother's quite overweight now. But he stays in England, and both him and his wife. But he was never overweight. So it's just since he's been in England, he's really put on
that weight. That photo I saw of you guys, you were like thin.
Yeah.
Thin. And
I've never really changed my body weight or the way I look. I just look as I did when I was... 19.
And your dad, was he a sort of a strong big guy, or was he small?
No, he was also quite demure. his only real sort of thing that he did outside of working like a slave, because he used to work like from 6 in the morning till 9 at night.
Checking,
you know, working overtime and stuff. And they were always in fucking debt, always. Yeah. By the time I was 12, I probably lived in about 23 different houses in the Glenwood area.
It's probably affected you, hey?
Probably. In the Glenwood, Durban area, because they never owned a house, they just rented it. You know, rent, stay for 6 months and move, stay for 6 months and move.
Mm.
So I can ride around Durban with you and show you so many houses that I lived in when I was a kid.
And they're still there.
One or two of them are gone.
Yeah.
But, yeah, and you know, what even fucked it up more for him was that he resigned from the railways after working there for about 25 years or something to buy a house in Glenwood.
Mm.
Which they were going to run as a boarding house.
Yeah.
But they fucked it up within 6 months.
Yeah.
And then he had to go back to working on the railways and start at the bottom of the ladder again.
Yeah.
So by the time he retired with a pension, it wasn't very big.
And the house, had they lost the house?
They lost the house. They lost everything. Because he took in people, they took in people who didn't pay. Like my aunt and my uncle didn't pay, they stayed in the front room. There was a couple in the back who didn't have money. Yeah, they were battling at that point, so my dad took them in. And so, but what saved my balls, as a lighty, was that I was into sports and the radio, music. I used to sing. I was in the church choir from about 8. And
This is 1959.
I used 16. To turn on the radio and just learn all the songs. In those days, there was
Springbok Radio.
It was called the Radio Record Club.
I remember that.
Radio Record Club.
Radio
it used
Record
to be
Club.
Every night, and there was like, and you had this image in your mind that the bands were in the studio playing, but of course they weren't. There were records being played, you know. But they used to make you think that there was a live, the bands in the studio with us. So.
Can you remember the DJs?
Oh, now you got me.
Springbok. I mean, I'm sure that guys like David Gresham.
Yeah.
Were DJs. What about that guy called Dave? There was a Dave Davies as well.
Dave
Davies and
Dave
Davies.
Yeah.
Now Lynn and Neville Dawson.
Yes.
Neville Dawson.
Yes.
Was Linda Dawson's dad.
Yes.
Linda Dawson played for a band called the N Sisters and is now dead.
Yes.
But this one guy told me that he
met Linda Dawson.
Yeah, blonde. And she went too fat towards the end, but she was a sexy girl and she was fun, eh, to speak to. Linda Dawson was so nice. But this guy was telling me that Neville Dawson, they used to get him pissed and then he had to read the news.
Yeah.
I don't know, maybe he got pissed naturally, you know, anyway. So, but maybe he did have a problem, but this guy told me that he heard Neville Dawson once sitting in a restaurant speaking to somebody else in a restaurant, and he thought the radio was playing, you know, and it was Neville, you know, with those sort of toffee-toned radio voice things that come
the
up.
Main DJ who was around in the 60s, who was associated with music at that point, was Peter Lotus.
Yeah.
Peter Lotus ran the Radio Record Club.
Okay, well, there's the name.
Peter Lotus, who also fancied himself as a singer. And I remember when I was in the Air Force, we were up at Rundu in Southwest Africa.
Yeah.
And we'd been there for 4 months, we hadn't left, and everyone was horny as hell, jerking off in the quiet of the tent or whatever.
Yeah.
So the army decides to bring up the Radio Record Radio Record Club Peter Lotus thing. No, that was in the Picker Box.
Yes.
Because he ran Picker Box as well.
And
they brought up a Picker Box to Rundu.
Money
for
the
troops. For the troops. And they brought a go-go dancer. One chick who had scanty clothes on and danced in front of everybody. And everybody was just so fucking horny. And I think some of the main brass maybe knobbed her that night, but that was disgusting, you know. We were all fucking craving women. I mean, even the black locals walking to the river with pots on their head started to look pretty cool.
And that was early, but no, that was later.
That was 1970.
Yeah, I went to the army in 1972. Straight after school, I was like 16.
I went July 69 to June 1970.
Where?
First 6 months at Valhalla, the Air Force Gymnasium.
Ah.
And then 6 months on the border.
Border. So that's when you... So you were... The, you
and
were
that's where I learned to play the guitar.
Yeah, I did too, actually. Hey,
I
so
learned
weird.
To play the guitar in the Air Force.
Yeah.
Because prior to that, I had... When I was 15...
Can I?
Yeah, when I was 15, well, from about 13, my folks at the local football club, they started running a weekly scene for the young people in the area, and they had a band from Malvern called the Kittens, who used to play every Saturday night.
What a cool name for a band, eh?
The Kittens. Yeah.
No.
And one of the things every week that they did was they would call me up at a certain part of the night and the lights would come on in the hall and all the crowd would gather around the stage and this little 13-year-old guy would get up there and sing things like, "Hey there, little Red Riding Hood," songs
really?
Like that, yeah. And some kinks like, Imagine Me, and well, not that one, I'm thinking of the Kink song that we used to do, Lazing on a Sunny Afternoon.
Oh, really?
And I'd sing two or three songs and the crowd would pat me on the back and the head. And then when I was 15, a guy approached me at the football club one day and he said he's from Hillary, his name is Clive, and he wants to start a band and he hears I'm a singer, would I like to join the band?
Mm.
So we formed a band called Parkinson's Law. And so from then onwards, I was into music.
So Parkinson's Law?
Spelt L-O-R-E.
Okay.
So what we did is we just sat around a table and got a dictionary and I saw Parkinson's Law and it looked interesting.
Mm.
So we called it Parkinson's Law. But we played covers. We played mainly the Kinks, Stones, stuff. And then when I went to the Air Force and I was 18, I learned to play the guitar.
But you had left school by then?
Oh yeah, no, I left school standard 8.
So were you working then? How did the army nobble you?
Well, what happened was when I left school, I joined the railways.
I went for the railways.
So I joined the railways as a trainee station foreman.
I was
a station foreman was the guy who pulls the signals for the train to be able to go through. Those days they were manual signals. Now it's all computer.
Yeah.
So I became a trainee in 1968, January 68, when I left school. I joined the railways as a training station foreman. They then sent me up to Eslin Park in the Transvaal to do a 3-month course so that I became a proper station foreman.
Have you got the certificate still?
Maybe, I don't know. And then I came back, and after I had worked a couple of months, I resigned, and I didn't do anything for about 6 months. Then I went back to the railways as a trainee checker. They accepted me back as a trainee checker.
And that was your dad's job?
Yeah. And then I went to checker school on the Bluff in Durban, became a checker, worked my time. And the reason I joined the railways as a checker was because I had got called up. And if you worked for a government organization like the railways while you were away, you got paid. So that's what I did. And then when I worked my time in afterwards, I worked a year for them and then I resigned. And since then, I've never really worked in a formal job. Oh no, I'm lying. So in 1975, when my youngest daughter was conceived, I went back to the railways also as a checker again. So I've worked for the railways on 3 occasions.
Always in Durbs?
Yeah. I've always lived in Durban. Yeah.
Was your dad still alive in 75?
Oh yeah, he died in 86. My mom died in 87, 88.
So if they like lost everything and he had to go back and everything, then when he finally was too old to work and he retired and everything, then where did they stay?
They applied for a moth cottage in Maritzburg.
Yeah, because he'd been in the war.
Yeah, so they got a moth cottage in Maritzburg, which was very pleasant.
Yes.
They were able to stay there nicely.
And that was pleasant. That was like,
yeah, and I used to commute up every now and then and go and see them. But yeah, my dad had very low self-esteem, you know, very low self-esteem. He was a very sweet man. He never raised a hand to me ever, not once. My mother used to clap us stupid, but my dad never hit us once.
But
and the interesting thing is, it just gives you an idea of our economic situation. We never went for a holiday ever as a family, ever, not once.
But you were at the sea, for God's sakes.
Yeah, but you know, my dad was always working.
Mm.
My mom used to take us away every now and then.
Mm.
So we had about 3 or 4 holidays in the time I can remember.
Did she work?
With my mother, no.
No. So she was a housewife?
Yeah.
Like my mom.
Yeah.
And your dad just worked, eh?
He worked.
But you say he had low self-esteem, but yeah. I also think that...
I think he was really...
Don't you think he was just humble?
He was very humble, but he was. I think he was also quite fucked up by coming back from the war and discovering a child with that woman. He probably loved her, I don't know.
Yeah.
And
that kid today? It's your half-sister?
I have no idea. Yeah, she's probably...
No, wait.
She would be my half-sister.
No, she's not related
no.
in any way to you,
no,
really.
No, she's not.
Yeah,
but she would be about 60 years old.
Yeah. And she wouldn't be a kitchen anyway.
No.
So you wouldn't be able to trace her?
No.
There's no connection there, really.
My folks had... My mom had... I once did see her name, but I just didn't really... And my mom had a photo of her.
Mm.
But I never really inquired about it.
But that's a typical war story.
Yeah.
I mean, the war did that.
Because Durban was a port city,
yeah.
So there was a lot of American ships stationed there and British ships stationed there.
Well, my mom's mom died in Addington Hospital of TB, but during the war they were staying in a residential hotel. And my grandfather was at the front in Africa. And then she was dying and they called him back. And he got back and within a few days she died of TB during the Second World War.
Yeah.
That was my mom's. And she was a Neelan from Liverpool.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah.
And I mean, that was just typical Durban. Durban, for me, was the most exotic place compared to Welkom.
It still is. It's probably the most unique place in the country in terms of its cultural mix. Eh? There's
yeah.
nobody like it. Like Indian, Zulu and white,
yeah.
mainly English. It's just like ridiculous. You know?
And you know what? The Cape Townians don't understand Durban at all.
Not at all.
And they call, you know, the mayor of Cape Town called Durban,
yeah.
not Helen Ziller, but this guy called Peter Murray.
Yeah.
Dirty Durban.
Well, I tell you what, the only metro in the country at the moment that's running at a profit.
mm.
Oh, yes.
Apparently it's growing.
Mark Sutcliffe is the manager of Durban and he's done a sterling job.
He must be pretty hot.
He is. He's been to a couple of Madala and I shows. He's bought my CDs. He's bought Madala CDs. He's a very humble dude.
But you know, as you grow older, Sid, don't you think that... I mean, it's what we are taught anyway by the great people who have gone before us. And that is that you're supposed to become selfless, not selfish. You're supposed to, like the whole Buddhist thing is that you lose yourself and you're not encumbered by anything, like, you know, possessions, hassles. And you become selfless, like Nelson Mandela in a way. That's one thing about him is that his, to me, his selflessness. And another person who was selfless, who didn't let the self get in the way of the world, was Mother Teresa of Calcutta.
And Gandhi, I suppose.
Yeah, Gandhi. And St. Francis of Assisi. And so you can go on. You know, these people who just, they didn't have much in the way of wealth. Okay, I suppose Nelson Mandela is wealthy, but it just goes to a trust and all the rest.
Yeah,
I mean, you can't.
But he's taken care of, you know, everything.
You can't use
that
money.
No.
Okay, that's the ones who become wealthy. But even if you're not wealthy, I mean, when you've risen to consciousness and everything and you become selfless,
yes.
That's, I think, one of the things that you have to achieve. Because if you're old and you still want to become something and be powerful or whatever, what's the point, eh?
Yeah, no, exactly. Well, I mean, the thing is like, for me, in terms of my talent, I get very embarrassed when I read sometimes the things that are written about me, because I don't view myself like that, you know. I view myself very much as a work in progress. I think I'm getting better as I get older, much better than I ever was. I'm writing more prolifically. I now understand music and what I can do with it. And
well, you're better now than that cassette that I heard in Orkney in the early 90s.
Of course, yeah.
Now, I'm saying better live than the cassette that I heard.
Yeah, yeah.
That gig last night was very entertaining.
Yeah.
I was actually very surprised. And I also think it's the guitar you're playing.
Yeah.
You know? But it's like you have started playing with the heavies, you know, the big pros.
Like it's a confidence thing, you see. I'm now... Well, when I went to Glastonbury, that really did a lot for me, because a lot of really good guitarists came and told me that I was really good.
Yeah.
And that, like, said, oh, shit, okay. So I started realizing that the only power I have as a marginalized artist is the belief in what I do and the unequivocal direction I've taken from when I was very young, which has never wavered. I've never stopped and I've never changed my direction, even though I've got clapped by cyclones and fucking mugged on the way. This is the road I'm going down. If it gets to a dead end at the end, cool.
Yeah.
Someone will blast that dead end out, you know?
Mm.
So for me, I really don't feel that that besides the fact that God gave me a talent, that I'm trying to fulfill that mandate that was given to me, in a sense, you know? I wouldn't want to get to heaven and he said, I gave you all that talent and you did fuck all with it, you chased money. You chase fucking money. Not that I don't like money, that I don't want money, you know, but if that's the entire impetus of your daily breath, then I think it just becomes a game. That's what these people are involved in, it's games.
Money is such a strange concept that I've never really been able to understand.
Evil is the root of all money.
Yeah.
So
no,
I
like earning a salary, I must say.
Yeah.
I get a lot of... No, I mean, this is quite... This is a very non-muso thing to say. You know, you know, when I bring home the bread every month, I sometimes feel very satisfied.
Of course you must.
That at least, you know, I went to work and I earned a salary.
And you're providing a great service to the community anyway.
No, I don't think of it like that. I think that... The community, if you work for the government, then you are a public servant and you shouldn't actually sort of pat yourself on the back, because you're being paid, you know. So you're not actually doing them a favor. It's a symbiotic thing. You're both just working together for the people.
Yes.
It's not like you're doing the people a favor or the government's doing you a favor by paying you. But my folks said to me, because I wanted to do music, and I didn't have your background at all. Like, I mean, we were sent to university.
Yeah.
And the Handleys in high school were nerds. They went straight to matric without thinking twice about doing it, and then they were going to go to university, all of them, because they had to get a university education, and that was that.
Yeah.
And it was provided.
Yeah.
Okay, we had to borrow money, we had to get bursaries and all
yes.
that sort of crap, because at one stage, my old man had four of us at university.
Yeah.
And it was hectic, but anyway, so I wanted to do music, and then my mom and I said to my folks, can I do 1 year of BMAS if I pass third year of medicine? And they said sure, but when I got there they said no. And then that's actually when I formed a band, and Nick Taylor was actually the cause of that as well, because I played some of my songs to him through this lady called Lulu van der Walt, and he said form a band, so I did. But I always resented, I kind of half resented the fact that I had to go to Boston.
Yeah.
You know, and had to get a qualification.
Yeah.
I resented it. It's weird, eh?
Yeah.
You know. I wanted to be a muser. But I don't think I had the proper working class roots of becoming a muser that you had. Because I think, I actually believe, I mean, I know that some people were middle class.
Yeah.
Who became musers. Like, I think the Rolling Stones were middle class.
Oh, it was particularly Jagger.
Jagger and...
And Brian Jones, maybe.
Brian Jones, definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah.
But most, I'd say, most great musicians of that time came from the working class.
Working stock, yeah.
They were like grave diggers. And, you know,
yeah, and the thing is that you realize that your talent is all you've got.
Mm.
So you relentlessly push forward,
yeah.
You know. And if you think of Rod Stewart, he was a grave digger, you know.
Yeah, Robbie Williams to me is very working class. I mean, I don't know if he was, but Robbie Williams to me looks like a sort of a
yeah, because he hasn't managed he hasn't managed his fame or his money very well. So that's an indication it's not old money, it's new money.
Yeah.
You know, new money does that. It spins the head for a while, and people do ridiculous things. Like he was up to 12 grams of coke a day at one stage. He was just going crazy. Was making so much money. He was the highest paid entertainer EMI had ever had.
Mm.
He signed a record deal with them and all that shit, you know. So,
mm.
And so, yeah, but I'm sure you see it in most, like in American basketball, some of the blacks thing, or in Brazilian football, or in South American football, where people from the slums make it through on their talent. They tend to get spun out for a while. Madonna, Maradona, you know, he, with his habits and shit, his coke habits and that. But I wouldn't go back and change anything. Actually, I wouldn't even change the fact that I was raped at 5, because I think it cut a pattern for my life. Which, and whatever I am today, if it's remotely attractive to anybody, it's the sum total of everything I've experienced.
Mm.
So if you had to change any of that, you wouldn't be who you are today.
Mm.
So I really don't regret anything. You know?
Mm.
I'd like to just maximize the time I have left on this earth and just put out as much product as possible.
I don't think you should stop.
Oh, no, I'll never stop.
I don't think you should stop doing what you are doing now.
Yeah.
Because I think that what I saw last night really works.
Because what I'm doing now with Greg Coetzee's help, hopefully when he's not so busy, is we're going to hone a 1-hour stage review of me. Because if I'm directed, I think some of the skits I've been developing, which he's now got and he's starting to rewrite them, they're fucking funny. And and if I intersperse that with song, it just takes me to another level where I can get work in the theatre and maybe tour England as a performer in a one-man
show. Have you performed to South Africans in the UK?
Yeah.
What's it like?
Oh, it's okay.
Don't they sort of like really love you?
Yeah, no, they do. I mean, you know, a lot of them knew Africa's Not for Sissies, the song, because they heard it at Splashy Fen, wherever. So, yeah, but like when I played at the Half Moon in Putney, which is a very famous club.
Yeah.
The walls are signed by everybody that's played there, you know. Stones, Clapton, everybody's played there, Hendrix. Chris Letcher came to see me. Letcher from
Urban Creep.
Yeah.
Derbs.
Yeah. He came and visited me and watched the show. So South Africans, if they knew I was there, they did come if they knew who I was.
Kurskom Bass.
Yeah.
Apparently played, I might have even been with the Springbok Mute Girls or something. They played some gig in London. Apparently it was like so packed, it was an amazing gig. Some tour that
they all play at the Springbok Club, which is
the
South African melting pot.
Did
South
you play
African.
There?
No.
That would have been quite cool.
Yeah.
Or is it not cool to play?
I don't know. I just didn't get to play there.
Mm.
I think it's more a rock venue.
So what's happening to you this year?
I'm planning a trip to America in July, and I want to put out another 2 albums this year. I'm doing one now. Next month I'm going up to Pretoria to record another album. Just hired a week's space.
Are you going to pay for it?
Yeah, I pay for everything I do.
But I mean, who's going to record you?
A guy called Venan van der Walt. It's where I have my new album I've just released 3 weeks ago. That's where that was recorded.
I haven't heard it yet.
You're going to get it.
Sound good?
Yeah.
It's lekker.
Beautifully recorded.
Has he got a lekker studio?
Yeah, it's very nice.
Mm.
And he's very reasonable. He's giving me like ridiculous rates because he's a big fan and he's respectful and he knows that I don't have megabucks.
Is it a home studio?
But he's moved it into a whole thing now. It's proper.
It's properly set up like, you know, the guy.
Got a dead room, got a live room.
The guy knows what he's doing.
Yeah. Very much so, yeah.
Just, I forgot to ask you about your daughters. I know that they're in their 30s.
Yeah.
What are their names?
Jasmine. And
Jasmine?
Yeah.
Really?
My eldest is Jasmine and Sev, S-E-V, Sev.
S-E-V. What Sev. Does Sev mean?
I was going to call her a seven.
Yeah.
But I thought she could tease and be called six or eight.
Yeah.
So we just made it shorter and just called her Sev.
And the mom?
The mother, Renee, she lives in J-Bay with my eldest daughter.
Mm.
She's got a little garden flat in the garden.
And is she your age or younger?
She's 4 years younger than me.
And is she married again?
No, but she's had a couple of long-term things. Yeah. But she's not married yet.
And is she a kitchen or?
No.
I never got married.
No.
And your daughters, have they got your surname?
My youngest daughter has, and the oldest one's got her name.
What's that?
Jasmine Tupper.
Tupper. Jasmine Tupper and Sev Kitchen.
Kitchen, yeah.
And do any of them play or sing?
No.
Not?
Nothing, no.
Not at all?
No. And neither in our family. It was just me and my brother, which was quite odd.
So your dad didn't sort of like play harmonica or anything?
My dad wanted to paint, but he was impaired with his hands. He used to be a football referee, so that was his bit of recreational stuff. He used to referee football matches.
It sounds like your old man, you know, like a referee is a certain type of character, hey? A referee is like a, I don't know, like an ethical person, you know, a fair person, a
judge.
He was
a lovely man. He had a dry sense of humor, ridiculous.
Yeah.
Ridiculously dry. I think that's where I got my sense of humor.
Yeah.
And from his brother as well, his brother Plummer was my big hero. My uncle Plummer, he was like...
What do you mean Plummer? Was that his name?
His name was Plummer.
His first name?
Plummer Thomas Kitchen.
Plummer Thomas Kitchen.
Yeah.
And what did he do?
He was a shunter on the railways.
Okay.
He used to marshal the trains.
Yeah.
Also lost a couple of fingers in that
That's very, very dangerous business.
Yeah, in those days, yeah.
Yeah.
And
in the days of steam.
He married my mom's sister. So two brothers married two sisters.
That's just like quite a...
They were quite close, all four of them.
I think that your childhood in Durban sounds very rich to me.
It was amazing.
I mean, it might have been poor.
Yeah.
And you might have moved a lot, but you didn't.
But because
leave
we didn't have it, we didn't miss it.
And schools?
Schools, I went to just normal little public schools. We went to Glenwood Infants Primary, Parkview Primary, and then I went to George Campbell High School.
George Campbell.
Left that to stand at 8.
Yeah. Where's George Campbell?
Down North Beach.
North Beach. Is it on the beach?
No, it's just inland, in just near if you know, a Point Road becomes Brickhill Road, becomes...
It's still very familiar.
Somsey Road, and it was in Somsey Road. It's near, right next to the Durban Drive-In. The school's right next to the Durban Drive-In.
Okay. But I think what you don't appreciate, because you were there, is that you're talking about living in a town that every miner that I grew that you know, I mean, we grew up on the mines, and the Witwatersrand goldfield went from, let's say, Evander, right the way through to Springs, to Joburg, and then Potch to Welkom. And if it could have gone all the way around, it would have gone via Bethlehem back to Evander. And there is gold there in the Bethlehem area. It's just like, I don't know, faulted or deep or something.
Yeah.
But that whole area of South Africa was full of these people who worked underground. And I mean, I grew up in that environment. And people who worked underground didn't want
to
die. No, they didn't want to die underground.
Yeah.
Because if you've worked underground, and I've worked underground for a year. Shit, you don't want to die underground. When you come up to surface at the end of your shift and you can see the sun on the shaft, and then you come up and the sun's shining, and you step out of that cage, you think, thank fuck, you know, I'm alive, nothing can kill me. And then you climb into your car and you die on the road. It was actually more dangerous to drive than to work underground. But anyway, those people all went to Durban.
Yeah, sure.
And everybody who had worked on the mines definitely had been in Durban one way or another, and wanted to live in Durban and wanted to, you know, go to the east coast of South Africa. And you were in that, you know, in that holiday resort. So you must have hated those people who came down in their absolute thousands.
Yeah, I know, for sure. But
you know, and that was us.
But it didn't really affect me. I didn't feel it like that. You know, I just, I had a little close group of friends, and we used to play. I was just mad about football. And then from about the age of 11, I played baseball. Ended up playing for Natal.
So you're very into sport, eh?
That's what saved my life when I was a kid. Otherwise, I would have been a total fuck up. Total fuck up. Sport and the radio.
Yeah.
Radio. Singing.
Yeah.
And
reading?
Yeah, I used to read. But I read much. I read a hell of a lot from about the age of 17 onwards. You know. Right through my 20s, I read very prodigiously.
And then you also grew up in a place that produced a lot of musicians.
Yeah.
And I mean the scope for just playing in hotels and, you know, playing in a band in Durban was vast.
Yeah, yeah.
Absolutely
yeah.
vast. I mean the Beach Boys came to South Africa, I'm sure they went to Durban.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean that's where they met the Flames.
Yeah.
You know. I mean all that shit.
Yeah. yeah.
That I mean that where we came from, the Free State. The Free State was completely and utterly and totally uncool. If you drove down to Durban and you went to that, I can still remember as a kid, if you bought a t-shirt on the beachfront that was a Hang 10 t-shirt, and I don't know if they were then imported. You know, they probably were.
It was Max Wetland's surf shop at the bottom.
Whatever it was.
On West Street.
And you had some clothing with those 2 feet on it.
Yeah, you were hip.
And you wore it in Velcom.
Yeah, you were hip.
You were hip. You know, you were really there. And you couldn't buy that stuff in the Free State.
Yeah.
It wasn't available.
Yeah.
Later, of course, all
that
stuff became available, but that's much later.
Yeah.
But Durban was where it was at, eh?
No, I hear you. And I think my fascination with the place is the reason why I've never left it. You know? Everyone I know has left it. But but I still live there. I own property there and I love it.
Did you buy that flat?
Yeah.
You bought that flat?
Yeah.
Is it a sectional title type of job?
No, it's a body corporate.
Body corporate, whatever that is.
It's
run by a body corporate.
Yeah.
But you...
I own one of them.
Everybody in that building owns one flat.
Yes.
And then you are a member of the body corporate.
Yeah. And you pay a monthly levy and it goes to maintaining the building, paying rates and that. So, but I just love the weather. You know, everyone says Durban is so hot, but that's why God gave us a lovely warm sea there. Just jump in the fucking water. You know?
That's the only sea that I relate to.
Yeah, it's amazing.
You know, Steve Howells as well. Eh? Went and played Durban in the early 90s, and it was pissing. And we were in this hotel eating scones and drinking tea in this hotel room, trying to sort of stay sober for the first gig that night. And everybody was very bored, and Steve couldn't take it. And he ran out into the rain, onto the beach, and swam in the rain in the sea, you know. And he came back an hour later. And I so envied him because I didn't do that, you know.
Yeah.
I felt duty bound to hang around with all the other people and just talk shit. And
It's an amazing place. I love it. It's got an absolute pluck all of its own. And I think Madala and I are quite unique in the sense that we're very representative of Durban. When you hear our stuff, when you hear that album, I give you, you'll know what I'm saying. It's very Durban. And when you watch the video of Manje, it's walking through the Durban streets.
Yeah, Manje, I've seen that because I've got it. I couldn't get it to play on this thing, but I did see it.
Okay.
I've got it. And Bafo.
Yeah.
It's here.
Yeah, cool.
I've got that. I've got it off Mike.
Michael, yeah.
Okay, can we take a break?
Yeah, sure.